Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Program 371 in the series. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl, what's up?
Look who's in the booth. We have Shante Garth, our producer, and we have classic radio shows all the way to 2 a.m., The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes from 1948. Then You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx, and then Tales of the Texas Rangers from 1951, Joel McRae as star. Hey, I want to say hi to one of my classic radio club members. I ran into her and her husband at Bold American Fair on Friday night, and she was with her friends Tom and Dale, and I want to say hi because hopefully Luann and her husband Jim and Tom and Dale are listening. We had a great time. It was so nice to meet them. And you know what, Lisa Wolf? Bold American Fair, my new favorite restaurant in the Barrington, Algonquin area.
Sounds right. Good.
All right. Are you ready for our game?
I sure am. This
what
is
our
Cat's
game?
Pride, real or ridiculous?
Never heard of it.
Well, I'll tell you what we do.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Marilyn Monroe.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
We're going to give away a Lou Malnati's gift certificate.
Yeah.
So it's all good.
Wow. Pizza.
And yeah.
Pizza.
Pizza, pasta, salad, whatever. And what we're going to do is ask for the fifth caller. Call in. We're going to play a little real or ridiculous. We've got three statements about Marilyn Monroe. You are an excellent lifeline. If you get them right, you win. If you get them wrong, you win. So either way, you're a winner and you get to be on WGN Radio Theater.
All right. 312-981-7200. Which caller?
Caller 5. Call now.
All right. We'll be right back.
Come on, baby.
All right, we're going to get real or ridiculous with Leanne. Hi, Leanne.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
How's Carl?
I'm good, Leanne. How are you?
I'm just great.
All right, you're going to win a Lou Malnati's pizza gift certificate.
All right, we're all good. We're all great. We're going to do a little Marilyn Monroe. You ready to go?
Yes.
Number one, she had plastic surgery. Is that real or ridiculous?
Real.
Carl?
It is real.
It is real. She had a nose job.
Yeah.
And she also had cartilage placed in her jaw to make her chin line stronger.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that was brave. Number two, she had a stutter. Is that real or ridiculous?
That's real.
I agree. It's real.
It is real. And she covered it thanks to some expert vocal coaches.
All right.
Number three, can't fool you. She appeared on the first cover of Playboy magazine.
What do you think?
Ridiculous.
No, it's real.
It is real. 1953, she was on the cover.
That's
but
for
you. But you did a great job. You did a great job, and either way, you're the winner, not you, Carl.
Ask me any trivia about Playboy, I'll know.
I bet you will. Blah, blah. Leanne, you're a winner. You've won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza, our favorite pizza here at WGN Radio Theater. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Take
care.
Nice to talk to you.
Way to go. She's a big winner. And our listeners are big winners because we have three great classic radio shows all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. And, folks, we are here two nights a week, not just Saturday night. We're here Saturday and Sundays beginning at 11 p.m. playing all your favorite classic radio shows. And we have a text in line. It is 312-981-7200. We're here till 2 o'clock in the morning, so you have plenty of time to text us. Lisa, did you have a nap today?
No, I did not.
I did not. not either. So
we'll keep each
we
other
are going
awake.
To need you to text us to keep us awake, folks. Text us in. We love getting your texts. All right, it's time for The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. You know, Sherlock Holmes was on the radio almost nonstop from the beginning of the dramatic days of radio in the early 1930s all the way to the late 1950s. There were tons and tons of different actors who played the roles of Holmes and Watson. Of course, the best known were Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. On this particular episode, we have John Stanley and Alfred Shirley. They took over the roles after Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce stopped playing the roles on radio. And, of course, they were playing the roles in the movies. But I don't think you're going to notice the difference between John Stanley and Alfred Shirley. They did an amazing job as Holmes and Watson. Let's go back to February 29th, 1948, for the case of King Philip's Golden Salver, part one of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
From New York City, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and 1036 leading retail stores from coast to coast present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Tonight's adventure, the case of King Philip's Golden Salver.
Well, well, if it isn't our old friend Mr. Harris returned from his vacation with a brand new coat of tan.
But still wearing my favorite Clippercraft suit, Doctor, and looking forward to a Sherlock Holmes adventure. What's it to be tonight, Dr. Watson?
Well, Mr. Harris, it concerns the strange disappearance of an elaborate golden platter sent to Queen Elizabeth by Philip of Spain. It was, of course, a priceless historical masterpiece which belonged by rights with the rest of the crown jewels in the Tower of London.
The Tower of London, what a fabulous place that is, Dr. Watson.
It is indeed, Mr. Harris, dating from William the Conqueror. It has been a citadel, a royal palace, a state prison, and a mint. It is still a fortress, an armory, and a treasury with a resident military garrison.
Quite a setup.
It represents the most glorious as well as the most bloody pages of English history.
And does tonight's story live up to the Tower's reputation, Doctor?
Well, now, suppose I answer that question after you've said a word or two in behalf of Clippercraft,
Fair enough, Dr. Watson. Wherever you go in America, fine stores sell Clippercraft clothes. Yes, proudly sell them. And recommend them to men who demand the most for their money. Now, that's because truly fine clothes, especially in these days of high prices, are nowhere else available at such modest prices. You see, it's the Clippercraft plan that makes these amazing values possible. By concentrating the buying power of 1036 fine stores from coast to coast, tremendous savings are made in manufacturing and distribution costs. The savings go just one place, to you. At a friendly local independent store, you get superlatively fine Clippercraft suits at the incredibly low price of $40 and $45. Beautifully tailored top coats and fine coverts and worsted gabardine for only $40 and $45, and sport jackets for only $26.50. Compare them tomorrow with clothes selling for many dollars more. And now to return to the Tower of London, Dr. Watson.
Yes, it was one glorious afternoon in early June. The late afternoon sunshine cast a glow of gold on Tower Green. To the right of us loomed the great original keep of William the Conqueror, called the White Tower.
Say, I've seen pictures of it, part fortress, part dungeon.
Yes, to the left was Beauchamp Tower, and directly ahead was the little chapel of St. Peter. Holmes was enjoying one of his favorite forms of relaxation, feeding raw beef to the ravens who still inhabit that spot. The same spot where once stood the scaffold on which was poured out the lifeblood of some of the greatest names in English history.
Here, 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 I'm not so greedy. You've had your share.
Oh, great, bloated, beastly birds with their evil yellow eyes. How can you endure the sight of them, Holmes? Think of the bodies their ancestors must have fed on.
Don't be so squeamish, Watson. The scaffold which formerly stood on this site was used only for the beheadings of Queens Anne Boleyn and Catherine Howard, the Countess of Salisbury, Viscountess Rockford, Lady Jane Grey, and the Earl of Essex. No, 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 you next. As a rule, the political prisoners incarcerated in the Tower were beheaded on Tower Hill or hanged at Tyburn. There were, of course, exceptions.
Well, naturally.
Archbishop Cranmer and Bishops Latimer and Ridley were burned at Oxford. Sir Walter Raleigh was executed in Old Palace Yard. Sir Thomas Overbury was poisoned. The two little princes, Edward V and the Duke of York, were strangled in the Bloody Tower. Then, of course, there was the Duke of Clarence, who was drowned in a butt of Malmsey wine.
I must say, if I had to be executed, that's the method I'd choose. Oh, go away, you shoo! Ow! Holmes, he bit me.
Serves you right for making sport of the Tower's traditions.
Hello. Who's the young lady coming across the parade grounds? She looks vaguely familiar. She's holding her parasol so far over her face she can't... There, you see, she almost ran into that beef-eater. Now she just missed the old lady with the ear trumpet. What's the matter with the girl? Can't she see where she's going?
Probably not, Watson. She's trying desperately to keep from crying.
Great Scottish Lady Cynthia, sister of that ass Bobbison Simon and daughter of the Duke of Balmoral. Now, what do you suppose a pretty thing like that has to cry about?
Life isn't all beer and skittles, Watson, even to those in Burke's peerage. Yes, and miss, I'm very much mistaken. She's upset because her fiancé, young Lieutenant Ronald Backwater, has been chucked in the guardhouse and threatened with court-martial and dismissal from the Tower Guards.
Good Lord, whatever for?
Stealing, Watson. He's accused of purloining a precious golden platter. Yes, I rather thought we might run into the Lady Cynthia if we visited the Tower this afternoon.
Holmes, you fraud, and I thought you came here to feed the ravens.
Here she is. My dear Lady Cynthia, is there anything I can do?
No, no, thank you. I'm quite all right. A cinder in my eye. There's nothing I... Wait a minute. You're Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
At your service.
Oh, I don't know what to say. Oh, dear, what did I do with my handkerchief?
Oh, allow me to offer mine, Lady Cynthia.
Thank you. Oh, you must be Dr. Watson. Oh, you're both so kind to me. He didn't do it, you know. Ronnie isn't a thief.
Of course not.
It's all the fault of that dreadful old man.
What old man?
Sir Stafford Blodgett, the new mayor and governor of the Tower. He's a dried-up old bachelor himself, well over 40.
Dear, dear, practically senile, eh, Watson?
He doesn't want anyone in the guards to get married.
Blodgett? Great Scott, that must be old blood and bullets Blodgett.
Yes, I believe that's what Ronnie and Arthur call him. Arthur can't get married either because his fiancée hasn't any more money than I have. Oh, and I hate that old Blodgett and I wish he were dead.
You're not the first to make that statement, my dear. I served under him at Maiwand where he won his V.C. The entire regiment hated his gizzard. Well, he is a magnificent soldier and as cruel a man as ever ordered his native orderly beaten for forgetting to clean his boots.
Oh, the beast! Why did he have to be put in charge of the Tower? Dear, I'm making a perfect spectacle of myself. What will everyone think?
Now, it's the heat and the sun. Very, very trying. Suppose we just slip into the little chapel of St. Peter's up ahead there.
Where it's quiet and dark and cool. We'll pick out a nice, comfortable pew, and you can tell Sherlock Holmes all about it.
There we are, my dear. Suppose we take the third pew.
Oh, thank you.
Watson, you might offer the lady a whiff of smelling salts and a fresh handkerchief.
I'm sorry to be such a nuisance. I'll be all right in a minute.
Quite. As you know, Watson, the premises known as the Tower of London are completely surrounded by the City of London. It's a self-ruled and regulated community. Its gates are locked at night, and its ancient moat, although it's drained to make a parade ground, is still capable of being flooded.
Sounds fairly medieval.
And the absolute ruler of the entire place, the individual whose word is law, is the mayor and governor.
In this case, old Blood and Bullets, alias Stafford Blodgett.
Correct. He resides on the premises, as do his officers and men.
That's right, Mr. Holmes. Well, last night, Sir Stafford Blodgett invited five of the younger officers to his quarters for dinner. The ones who had petitioned to marry this June, you know.
Good Lord, do they have to get permission from him to do that, too?
Oh, no, not to get married, exactly. But he does say whether or not he considers the young lady suitable, you know.
And if he decides they're not?
Oh, then the prospective bridegroom is advised to give up the whole idea or resign from the guards.
How perfectly barbaric.
Quite.
So you can imagine how dithery the poor chaps were when it got round they'd been summoned to hear the verdict. Dinner was to be at 8, and promptly at 3 minutes past, they sat down at Sir Stafford's oak table in his sitting room in the Byward Tower.
Byward Tower? But I thought the governor's quarters were always in King's House.
And so they are. But that would be too cozy and cheerful for the old vulture. No, he's moved into Byward Tower, because it's grimmer, I'll be bound.
I wonder. It is on our rather strategic advantages, you know.
Byward Tower is a curious appellation, eh, Holmes? I wonder how it got the name.
Byward was formerly a synonym for password, Watson. Byward Tower's always been the main entrance to the Tower of London.
Of course. That's why he's moved there, so he could spy on his men as they went in and out.
There could just possibly be another reason, you know. However, suppose you finish telling me about the dinner party.
Oh, it was a very elegant dinner party. Properly chilled white wine with a turbot, an excellent burgundy with a roast. Not that anyone but old Blood and Bullets had much appetite. He eats like an anaconda. Well, finally they came to the suite. It was served on an enormous golden platter, which Sir Stafford had specially brought in for the occasion.
That's definitely an organ there, Lisa.
No comment.
And that is the first portion of Sherlock Holmes. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. Before the break, we were listening to Sherlock Holmes with A Case of King Philip's Golden Salver, starring John Stanley and Alfred Shirley. Here is the conclusion.
Bring me that putter, Chivers. And finish off that last bit of pudding.
Yes, sir.
I want these young hopefuls to have a good look at the design underneath. Yeah. Ah, there. Ah. Clean as a whistle. Pass it around. That's a good chap.
Oh, very good, sir.
But I say, Sir Stafford, isn't this that King Philip's salver that's kept with the crown jewels?
Right you are, Backwater. Presented by Philip of Spain to Elizabeth when he was courting the lady. Hence the rather, frank representation of the goddess Aphrodite and all the little cupids. Yes. A historic piece. Rather appropriate to this occasion, eh, what? That's why I had it brought over. Of course, Philip never managed to marry the lady. We hope you lads have better luck.
Oh, did he have to say that? Dashed bad taste.
Easy, Ronnie. Don't get the wind up.
I don't like the glint in the old buzzard's eye. He's up to something.
And now as the port goes round, shall we proceed to the more agreeable portion of the evening's entertainment? Yes. I have here a list of the young ladies on whom you have bestowed your affection for one reason or another. That's not a joke, Backwater.
Oh, sorry, sir.
Personally, I've never believed that marriage was a help to any man's army career. However, as there's no ruling against it, there's very little I can do, I suppose. Yes, now, let me see. Lieutenant Reginald Wentworth, you wish to marry the Honorable Nora Jennings?
Yes, sir.
No objections.
Oh, poor Reggie, I think he's going to faint with relief.
Next, Lieutenant Herbert Woolsey. You desire to marry a Miss Ruby Reynolds. I understand she's an American. Most unsuitable.
But she was educated in England, sir.
I said most unsuitable. Next, Lieutenant Arthur Amberson.
Here I go.
Has chosen a Miss Fanny Venable. No objections.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Good luck, Arthur.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Lieutenant Buford Wellington intended his, Lady Daphne Marchbanks. Sorry, Wellington, won't do.
But her father is the Earl of Battersby, sir.
Her mother was a Gaiety girl. Quite out of the question.
What rot, Arthur. Daphne's mother's first rate, accepted everywhere.
Easy, Ronnie, don't get hot under the collar. You're next. Oh.
At last, we come to Lieutenant Ronald Backwater, who wishes to marry Lady Cynthia St. Simon. Delightful young lady. Most suitable.
That's a relief. Not that I expected trouble, but
I have only one thing more to say on this subject. During my tenure here in charge of the Tower, I shall make one further ruling about young ladies who marry into the Corps.
What's that, sir?
As you know, the officers in this outfit are a hand-picked lot. We've always boasted the best blood in the Empire.
Even if we are only younger sons.
My point, exactly. Younger sons are so often not too well supplied with worldly goods.
That's one of the reasons we chose the army, sir.
Don't interrupt, confound it.
Oh, sorry, sir.
The pay of an officer in the Tower Guard is enough to keep him in proper style. If he is a bachelor.
Now what's he getting at?
Quiet, Ronnie.
It has, however, come to my attention that men with families sometime have to scrape a bit.
Don't tell me the old boy's going to get us a raise and pay.
Oh, not old blood and bullets.
The Tower Guard is called upon to appear on many occasions of state. During the last royal review, I was horrified to notice that the dress uniforms of two captains Both of them, married men, showed signs of wear. One of them had a small darn on the left sleeve.
Oh, horrors, the empire is crumbling.
Consequently, I feel it incumbent upon me to make a new ruling. Any young lady wishing to marry an officer of the Tower Guard must bring with her a dowry of £5,000 minimum.
But that's outrageous, sir. It's impossible. The girls we want to marry, they're from good families, but they're not rich.
Then I suggest you look around a bit further until you find some that are.
But that's unfair, sir. It's rank tyranny.
Backwater, are you presuming to criticize your superior officer?
Yes, by heaven,
Ronnie.
By what right do you...
Ronnie, shut up, you fool. Don't get the old boys back up. We'll get round him somehow.
What's that?
Oh, I was telling Lieutenant Backwater that you had only his own good at heart, sir.
Yes, I'm glad to see someone in this outfit has some appreciation of my point of view. And now, gentlemen, when Chief is clear as the table, I suggest I show you around my quarters. First of all, I'll demonstrate the portcullis. Oh, by the way, Shivers, put the gold platter on the table by the door. And don't take your eye off of it for a minute. I'll take it back to Wakefield Tower myself later on.
Very good, sir. Right away, sir.
And now the portcullis, gentlemen. The machinery that operates it is here in the hallway next to the bar. Wait. I'll demonstrate. I'll carry the key to the padlock myself. Don't want anyone else fooling with it, you know. Here we are. Now then, if someone will warn them below, the bars of the portcullis are dashed heavy. Wouldn't want to impale anyone.
I'll attend to it, sir.
Look out below! We're lowering the portcullis.
Ready, you ain't. Here she goes.
I say, sir, that is impressive.
Yes. This portcullis here in Bywood Tower and the one in the Bloody Tower are the only two in England still in working order.
Must make you feel quite safe, sir. Once that's down, no one can get in.
And no one can get out, either. But come along, gentlemen. I'll show you my sleeping quarters. This way. I only use three rooms. Kitchen, sitting room, and bedroom. Enough for an old soldier, you know. Here we are, gentlemen. My bedroom.
I say, it's almost circular, built into the tower itself. And what a whopping big canopy bed.
I never use it. Here's where I sleep. Here in this alcove. Don't believe any soldier worth his salt should sleep in a bed. My army cot here. Slept on it during all my campaigns. Sleep on it now and always will, confound it. Probably die in it. A Spartan life. That's what the army needs. Discipline. Self-denial. What's the matter, Backwater? Why are you looking at me like that?
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I feel a bit under the weather. If you'll excuse me a moment, sir.
Typical. Typical of the younger generation. No intestinal fortitude. Can't even carry their liquor. Come over here, gentlemen, and I'll let you see my decorations. Keep them in a box here in the top drawer.
Cheevers, I'm sorry, but the bathroom door seems to be locked.
Oh, yes, sir. The governor keeps the key in the sideboard. I'll fetch it for you. He's a very cautious chap, the governor is. Keeps everything locked up, even to the whiskey. In the bottom drawer. Here it is. Here it is, sir. What's the matter, sir? You look so stiff and funny. Like he was on parade.
Oh, it's nothing, Cheevers. I've just had an idea. A perfectly brilliant idea.
And then ends the tour of the premises. It didn't take long, eh, what? Cheevers, cigars, and bring another decanter of port.
Yes, sir.
I say, what's become of Backwater?
Here he comes, sir, across the hall.
Hey there, Backwater. In here.
Oh, sorry, sir. When I finished washing up, I went back into the bedroom to join you.
Well, we're back in here. You missed seeing my medals.
Oh, I say, sir, I am sorry.
Never mind.
Major! Oh, I mean, Governor!
What up, Chivers? How often must I tell you not to address me as Sir Stafford?
Yes, sir. Well, sir, whoever you are, the platter's gone, sir.
What?
Yes, sir. Someone swiped Philip's golden platter.
Imagine the commotion, Mr. Holmes.
Quite.
Oh, blood and bullets, blood pressure probably blew up and burst.
Oh, it did, Dr. Watson, it did. He lost all sense of proportion. He immediately accused Ronnie of having taken the wretched platter, simply because he was the only one who was out of his sight for a moment.
And also because he'd come back into the sitting room to speak to Cheevers, no doubt.
Yes, but he couldn't have done it, Mr. Holmes. I mean, Ronnie wouldn't think of such a thing.
My dear Lady Cynthia, I hope Ronnie insisted on being searched immediately.
Oh, he did, Mr. Holmes. They didn't find a trace of anything, naturally. But even then, Sir Stafford wasn't satisfied. He said Ronnie had probably dropped it out of the windows to an accomplice.
Sir Stafford's a fool. The presence of an accomplice would mean the theft was premeditated. I gather no one but Sir Stafford knew the platter was to be on the premises.
That's right, Mr. Holmes.
Then there's no possibility of an accomplice. Whoever stole King Philip's salver was present at the dinner party.
What's to prevent an outsider sneaking up the stairs when everyone was in the bedroom admiring Sir Stafford's medals?
You forget, Watson, the portcullis had been lowered. No one could get in or out. No, the golden platter was undoubtedly still on the premises when it was found to be missing.
But that's impossible. Arthur and the rest insisted on being searched, too. And Sir Stafford Blodgett went over the rest of the premises himself.
Very interesting, eh, Watson? And yet the platter must be there. It probably still there, in the most obvious place.
Why, Mr. Holmes, what do you mean by that?
Ever read the purloined letter, Lady Cynthia?
No, I can't say I have.
If you had, you'd realize at once what probably happened to the platter. Yes, Watson, I suggest you and I go round to the guardhouse and have a chat with the incarcerated Lieutenant Ronald Backwater.
But, Mr. Holmes, they won't let you see him. They won't let anyone see him.
Endurance vile, eh? Yes, I'm afraid the British Army doesn't always observe the rights of the individual as set forth in our common law, especially when there's a blowhard like Sir Stafford Blodgett in charge.
Oh, dear, then you can't do anything for Ronnie?
On the contrary, Lady Cynthia. By tomorrow morning, Dr. Watson and I shall arrive at the guardhouse with a note that should get us by St. Peter himself.
You mean Ronnie has to stay in that dreadful place another night?
One more night should strengthen, not weaken his case. But be of good cheer, my dear. I think I can safely promise that within 24 hours, the platter will have been found, and Ronnie and all his brother officers shall have obtained full permission to marry the ladies of their respective choice.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, you're wonderful.
Quite. My friend and I here have written permission to interview Lieutenant Ronald Backwater.
And who gave it you?
The rather august personage whose name is at the bottom of this pass.
All right, let's have a look. Blimey, the old girl herself. And it says here, you're Sherlock Holmes. Well, I never. Mind if I keep this slip of paper? I mean, missus will never believe me when I tell her.
As you like.
Come in, gentlemen. Please to step inside. All right, this way. It's just a step down the corridor. Now, mind the floor. It's a bit uneven. Lieutenant Backwater, sir.
Yes?
There's a Mr. Sherlock Holmes and a Dr. Thingamabob to see you, sir.
Thingamabob. Oh, such is fame.
Mr. Holmes, who sent for you?
I am acting on behalf of your fiancée, the Lady Cynthia St. Simon. She still wants to marry you, it seems, in spite of everything.
Oh, but she knows. She must know I didn't steal the silly platter.
You did take it, however. Don't you think it's been missing long enough?
The longer it's missing, the more of a fool he'll look when they find it. Oh, I'd like to see his face when it turns up. Maybe, may not be for months.
Not at all. Watson and I are about to go across to the Bywood Tower and find it for him.
Oh, good hunting, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Good hunting.
Cheevers. Your name is Cheevers, I believe.
Oh, yes, sir.
Tell Sir Stafford that Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson have come to trace King Philip's missing trencher.
Oh, you can't do that, sir.
Why not? Don't tell me it's already been found.
Oh, no, sir. Nobody's seen hide nor hair of it since I put it over there on that table by the door the night afore last. Ah, oh, just meant you couldn't see old Blood and the governor, because he's dressing for a view. Always puts his medals on for a view. Rules his rules with Sir Stafford. He don't never break any of them. Worse luck.
Interesting. Very interesting. I'm afraid the illusions of the tower guards are about to be shattered, eh, Watson?
I haven't the remotest idea what you're blithering about, Holmes. Uh-oh. Here comes old Blood and Bullets himself.
What's all this commotion in here? Who in blazes are you?
Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Dr. Watson. Weren't you attached to my regiment in the Second African War?
I joined the Boxers just before my wand.
Then why did you stay with him?
Because my shoulder was shattered by a Jezail bullet, and you needn't shout at me. I haven't been in the army for some years now, and it doesn't amuse me.
Bravo, Watson.
Watson, who is this uncut individual?
The most famous consulting detective in the entire world, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Never heard of him.
Well, he's here to solve the mystery of King Philip's missing salver.
Rats! I've looked everywhere. Chivers has looked everywhere. It's not here.
Oh, but it must be. It couldn't be anywhere else. You probably don't know how to look.
And I suppose you do.
Oh, I don't have to look. I know where it is.
You don't say.
It's in the only place it could be, you know. Young Ronald Backwater did remove it from the table. He took it with him to the bathroom, and later, when the bedroom was clear, he hid it in your bed.
But that's preposterous. Do you think I wouldn't have noticed it when I went to bed?
Oh, you would have, if you slept in the bed you claim you've slept in every night since you joined the army. Shall we investigate your army cot, Sir Stafford?
But,
I think we'll let Cheevers do it. Cheevers, would you mind bringing me the platter that's hidden in Sir Stafford's army cot?
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
Sir Stafford, I strongly suspect that you are neither a Spartan nor a celibate, as you claim to be.
Why, you... Where in thunder did you get that idea?
The next time you have a midnight visitor, I suggest you remind her not to leave her garter hanging on the samovar. Yes, a portcullis is a handy device to ensure privacy, isn't it?
You won't give me away, Mr. Holmes. I'd be the laughingstock of the entire British Army. Think of my reputation. Think of the battles I've won.
Think of the men you've browbeaten and bullied. Think of the young ladies whose hearts you've tried to break.
But I'll change all that. I'll turn over a new leaf. I'll be kindness and consideration itself.
Here it is, Mr. Holmes, the blinking platter, just where you said it was.
You go to places.
Now, Sir Stafford.
I mean, thank you, Chivers. Thank you very much.
Well, Dr. Watson, I never thought I'd hear of Sherlock Holmes playing Cupid.
And very successfully, too, Mr. Harris. There were 6 weddings in the Tower Chapel that June.
6? But, Dr. Watson, I thought you said only 5 young officers wanted to get married.
5 young officers, yes. But much to everyone's surprise, Sir Stafford decided to become a Benedict as well.
You never know what Sherlock Holmes will accomplish, do you?
You never do, Mr. Harris. You never do.
And now, Dr. Watson, what Sherlock Holmes adventure are you going to tell us next week?
Let me see. Suppose I relate the rather grotesque case of the 6 identical plaster busts, which were smashed one after another, and how murder and a fabulous duel were involved. It is, of course, the adventure of the 6 Napoleons.
The makers of Clipper Craft Clothes and 1036 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character of Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sherlock Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley. The dramatizations are by Edith Meiser. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, with special music by Albert Berman.
That's The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, February 29th, 1948, The Case of King Philip's Golden Salver, starring John Stanley and Alfred Shirley, as heard on Mutual. Let's have a few commercials, then we'll be right back. Lisa, do you have $1?
A $1?
Yeah, do you have $1?
Depends. Who's asking?
Do you have any dollars on you? Because if you had $1 on you...
Yes.
You could join the Classic Radio Club. And I know you're already a member, but you... this is metaphorically...
Yeah.
Like,
I don't actually have any money with me. Maybe you could spot me the dollar.
Yeah. $1 is all it takes to join the Classic Radio Club. And for the first month, get 5 CDs with 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time. You'll also get liner notes. They're in a collector case. They're sent to your home. Now, you do have to pay shipping and handling of $4.99, but the CD set itself, which is a $40 value, is only $1 the first month. Now, that same dollar will get you those same shows, 10 shows. shows emailed to you digitally to your email where you can listen to them on any listening device, and you do not have to pay shipping and handling for that. So $1, 10 classic radio
shows.
What if
you want to get them emailed and you want to get them on CD?
I don't think anybody does that.
Really?
I don't think there's anybody out of the hundreds and hundreds of members. I don't think there's anybody that gets them both ways.
Would that kind of rattle your brain?
Oh, my gosh. I got to try to wrap that around my noggin.
You keep thinking about that for a while.
Well, this is a fun offer. We're doing it so that if you are not a Classic Radio Club member, you can experience what it's like to be a Classic Radio Club member. Just $1 to try it out. Go to classicradioclub.com, right?
And that offer could go away anytime. Yeah. We're not sure how long it will last, so we're hoping that you take advantage of it now while we have the $1 offer.
That's right. And you can cancel your membership at any time. You will get 10 classic radio shows sent on 5 CDs each and every month, or you'll get 10 classic radio shows sent to your email that you can Bluetooth to your... That's what I do.
Or
I Bluetooth them to my...
Or both.
No. People only do one or the other.
Nope, you can do them both.
There's all kinds of testimonials at the website, too. People that have emailed in how much they like being a club member. So go to classicradioclub.com, and I am having a blast choosing the shows each month, the 10 shows, and I'm picking really the best of my library of 100,000 shows, the best quality, and we never edit the shows. They're fully intact, the full 30-minute shows, and with all the original commercials. Plus, I write about them. Very copious liner notes come with the CDs and the digital downloads. So do check it all out. I would love you to try it for only $1. Go to classicradioclub.com. In our next hour, Groucho Marx on You Bet Your Life. People really like this.
I do. I'm really looking forward to it.
You know what? Every time we play these, we get tons of texts in. People are like, oh my gosh, I love Groucho Marx. Play more. All right. Well, we have one in our next hour. After that, it's Tales of the Texas Rangers with Joel McRae in a true crime case that was produced and directed and created by Stacy Keach Sr., our good buddy Stacy Keach's dad. You know, Stacy Keach, who is the host of The Twilight Zone and played Mike Hammer? Well, his dad was a radio producer. In fact, he shared an office with Jack Webb. He told me the story. He was sharing an office with Jack Webb, and Jack Webb was creating Dragnet at the time, and he was talking to Stacy, and Stacy was giving him advice, and they were good friends. And when Dragnet was this huge success, you know, Stacy was like, wow, I'd like to do something similar, but with the Texas Rangers. So when you listen to the Tales of the Texas Rangers, you will feel like it is a little bit like Dragnet, only with the oldest law enforcement agency in the United States. You know, Texas Rangers are the oldest law enforcement agency.
You know, we have a picture, a few of them, with you and with me and with Stacy Keach Jr. I should dig that up and post that.
Wow,
see if I can
why
find
don't
that.
You? Yeah.
See what I can do.
Absolutely. All right, well, we will be back after the news with You Bet Your Life, starring Groucho Marx, so don't miss that.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. Okay, it is 10 minutes after midnight, so happy Sunday morning to all of our listeners and to you, Lisa. In this hour, we have You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx. And he was on radio and TV with this. This was like a huge hit. This was a game show produced by John Goodell. And he was like, you know, I think Groucho Marx would be the perfect person to host this kind of a show where he talks to the contestants for a while, gets to know them, asks some questions. It's real simple. I mean, he asks questions and then they win money if they get it right. But there was also the secret word. If in talking to the contestants. If they named the secret word, they got an extra $100, Lisa. Extra 100.
I love the secret word.
Yeah, it's really a fun series.
And I like that we know what it is before the show starts, yeah, so we can listen for it.
Yeah, the secret word in this episode is name, N-A-M-E. So we'll play that You Bet Your Life in just a minute. But first, it's time to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
The celebrity is James Dean.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
You're going way back.
I sure am. Marilyn Monroe,
now James Dean.
Right, but yeah. And
I would like to make an announcement.
Okay.
I got all three right.
You did.
Last time. All three.
Do you think you can do that
twice
in a row?
She's always saying that I'm horrible at this game.
I wouldn't say that.
I would agree with you. I am pretty horrible at this game.
But
I got all three right on Marilyn Monroe.
What do you think you'll do with James Dean?
I don't really know him.
Jimmy Dean.
James Dean.
Rock on.
Yeah, I don't really know that much about James Dean.
Right.
But we'll see.
Right. And the prize will be the highly coveted desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers.
All right. What caller would you like?
Caller three. Call now, 312-981-7200.
We'll play the game live right after these words.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
I know how much you love bacon, Lisa.
Yeah.
Just a bacon lover.
I'm a big meat fan. But we've got Frank on the phone to play a little Real or Ridiculous with us. Hey, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
Good.
Terrific.
Thank you.
We're going to play a little Real or Ridiculous. The celebrity is James Dean. The prize is the desktop indoor weather station. Here we go. Number one, James Dean was a champion gymnast in high school. Real or ridiculous?
Oh, boy. I'll go with ridiculous.
I'm going to agree with Frank. Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but
yeah.
he was a pole vaulter.
So
similar, but different. So far, so good.
Great.
I'm four out of four.
No.
Keep it going.
There's time. Number two, James Dean was nominated for an Oscar for his role in Giant after he died. Real or ridiculous?
That's a tough
real.
One.
Real. I say real.
I don't think it is. I'm going to say ridiculous.
Carl, what do I always tell you?
Listen to Frank.
Yes, what I said.
I wish I would have listened to
exactly.
Frank.
Exactly. Listen to Frank. I say listen to our
listeners.
There you
go, Frank.
Frank, you are right. Carl, your streak has been broken.
I didn't know that.
Yes. So sorry.
Man.
Number three, his first TV appearance was in a commercial for Bugle Boy Jeans. Real or ridiculous?
I'll say ridiculous.
I'm gonna say real.
You should listen to your listeners.
Frank got all three right. Way to go, Frank.
That was not real. I made that up. Absolutely false.
He was in a commercial, though.
He was. It was for Pepsi.
Frank kicked butt. He got them all
Carl,
right.
Carl, did you learn something?
Yes, listen to Frank.
Excellent. Or listen to your listeners, especially Frank. Frank, you are our winner. You've won the desktop indoor weather station. It is fantastic. Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-Minute Men. Give them a call at 855-955-HVAC. I love my desktop indoor weather station. It's right in my bathroom. I look at it every morning. I hope that you enjoy it.
Great. Thank you so
much. Terrific.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate you, buddy. Wow. I had four in a row, and then I just
then you blew it.
Really kind of, you know, did this after that.
I figured it would happen eventually.
All right, time for You Bet Your Life. April 19th, 1950. The secret word is name. Here's Groucho Marx on You Bet Your Life.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is name. N-A-M-E.
Really?
You bet your life! The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
That's me, Groucho Marx!
you. Well, here I am again with $2,000 for one of our couples. George Fenneman, who gets first crack at all that money?
A couple of people with unusual occupations, Groucho, and here they are. Mrs. Lita Griggs, who is wardrobe mistress for a circus, and Mr. Tommy Dalby, stage doorman for a burlesque theater. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if one of you says the secret word, you split $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Mrs. Griggs, eh?
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Griggs of the Cabbage Patch, is that... Yes, Mrs. Griggs. You're a wardrobe mistress for a circus?
That's right.
Which circus?
For the Clyde Beatty Circus.
You had a big circus?
They certainly have. They have
How big is it?
Three-ring circus. They have 75 lions and tigers, 200 performers, and the balance are the ticket sellers
Coachy,
and all
Coachy
that.
And, and Mr. Tommy Dalby, huh?
You're right.
You're the stage doorman at a burlesque theater?
Yes, sir.
At what theater?
At the Burbank Burlesque Theater downtown.
How did you meet your wife? Was she a chorus girl at your theater and she threw you a curve?
No, she worked at the theater. She was a cashier.
Oh, you married into money, huh? Your wife checks the figures at the front door while you check the figures at the stage door. Well, that adds up, I think. Mrs. Griggs, what does your husband do?
My husband is a clown.
Mrs. Griggs, everybody's husband is a clown. Let's face it, huh? Is he funny at home?
Oh, yes.
Could you give us an example of...
No, not right here.
How did you meet your husband?
Oh, I met him at a fox hunt.
Were you chasing him or was he chasing you?
No.
What do you mean you met him at a fox hunt?
Well, I tell you, all circuses have races.
What was he, a beagle?
They have races where pairs ride around the big tents, you know, and jump hurdles and all. And this day, I fell in a mud puddle. And he carried me out, and that's the way we met.
You went to a fox hunt in a mud puddle? I don't understand this. Where does the fox hunt come in?
The horses ride in pairs around the big top. They jump the hurdles.
Yeah.
I don't know where the fox comes from.
You just threw that in to make it more difficult, is that? Do you have any children?
I have three girls.
You have three girls?
Yes.
Yeah.
Three girls.
How old are they?
16, 14, and 11.
Oh, and do they go to the circus?
Yes, they do. They're all aerialists.
Oh, they're all in the circus?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you mean you can tune them in and get television programs? And... Well, how do they get to be aerialists?
Well, I used to be an aerialist when I was younger and thinner. So
I think you're young enough now to be an aerialist, Mrs. Griggs.
Thank you.
And thinner. Yeah. Tommy, let's talk about a man's subject, girls. Tommy, at your burlesque theater, how is business?
Oh, business is always good down there.
It's always good. Well, if it ever falls off at your place, business will be better than ever. Well, who are some of the headliners you've known that you've seen parade through your theater?
Well, we've had Betty Rowland, the Ball of Fire, Lana Barry, Redheaded Heat Wave. And
these are all pretty hot numbers, aren't they?
And Lil Sincere, the Anatomy Award winner. And right now,
what was that last one, Tommy?
The Anatomy Award winner. Yeah.
That's what I thought you said. Is it pretty exciting being a stage doorman at a burlesque theater?
No, it's... after a while, it gets a little...
Well, the first 50 years must be fun, isn't it? Well, after after talking to you two, I can say I've lived a very sheltered life. Now, let's see if you two will be high for the night and get the chance at the $2,000. Fan them and tell them the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected former Academy Award winners as your category. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. Now, you have $20. Here's your first question. How much will you bet?
$10.
Who won the Academy Award in 1942 for his portrayal of George M. Cohan in Yankee Doodle Dandy?
James Cagney.
James Cagney is right.
We're on the way, Groucho, with $30.
Well, you got $30. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the $30 will you try?
$20.
Who won the award in 1940 as Kitty Foyle?
Ginger Rogers.
Ginger Rogers.
They're climbing. They have $50 now.
Well, you burlesque man, you're stripping right along here. Here's your third question. How much of the $50 will you bet?
$45.
Oh, $45. Who won the award playing Father Flanagan in the picture Boys Town?
Spencer Tracy.
Spencer Tracy.
$95.
Are you sure you don't work in a movie theater? Well, you've got $95. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much will you bet?
$95.
All right. Who won the Academy Award in 1945 as Mildred Pierce?
Crawford. Joan Crawford.
Joan Crawford. Thanks, and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, don't go away. You may get the chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still name. Perhaps the next couple will say it. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a fireman and a housewife. And here they are, Mrs. Evelyn Russell and fireman Ben Brewer. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life. And if you say the secret word, you divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Mrs. Russell, where are you from, Mrs.?
Los Angeles, California. From India.
Whereabouts?
I was born in the Southwest.
Well, whereabouts Southwest? I mean, North Dakota or?
No, in California. I'm a native. I have to be in California if you're a native.
Not if you're a native of Los Angeles, you don't. You could be in Waco, Texas. Fireman Ben Brewer, huh?
Yes, sir.
Where are you from? The Smoky Mountains?
No, I come from Arizona.
With a banjo on your knee? tell me, Smokey Stover, what's the proper procedure for turning in a fire alarm?
Well, you merely break the glass and pull down the alarm. The important thing is not to delay, to turn it in immediately.
Well, most people are reluctant to ring the alarm because they're afraid that they'll break up your canasta game at the firehouse. Or poker, whatever they play. What do you play?
We don't play any poker. We're not allowed to gamble. We'd be dismissed if we gambled.
You mean they can fire a fireman? You don't play poker or canasta. Just what do you do between fires?
As of late, we have our fire prevention program. It keeps us out most of the day in our district. We can answer alarms because we're on the radio and in contact with our dispatcher. And we talk to the taxpayers.
Housewives?
That's right.
What do you tell the housewives when you call on them?
Well, shall I assume you're a housewife?
Well, many people have. Don't let this tie fool you, huh? Come on, let's assume that I'm a housewife, huh?
I'd say good morning, madam. We're out here in the street with our apparatus.
You don't even wait for me to say good morning back to you. Huh? Let's try it again, huh?
Good morning, madam.
Good morning, sir. How's Trix? What's new, big boy? What are you doing later on today? Okay, now the fire is still burning, I suppose.
We're around trying to enlist your cooperation and helping us prevent fires in this district.
Yeah.
We want you to watch rubbish in the backyard.
Yeah. Keep my relatives out of this, huh?
We wouldn't want you to put any pennies behind the fuses or allow the curtains to get over near the heater. We don't want the children to play with matches.
You're a real killjoy, aren't you? Mrs. Russell, do you have any fire hazards at your house?
Well, my husband's a fire hazard.
Your husband is a fire hazard? You mean he burns up easily?
Well, he smokes in bed.
What's your opinion of smoking in bed, fireman?
It's dangerous.
Well, I imagine there's more to it than that, huh? What other careless habits do people have that provide fire hazards? Do you have any rule for people to follow?
Well, we have one little rule.
You want to start over again and say, good morning, madam?
No, I'll give you the rule.
What is it?
Matches have heads, but they don't have brains. Whenever you start a fire, use your head.
That won't work. I've got water on the knee. Huh? That won't work. I've got water on the brain. Huh? Now, where else could I have it? Let's see.
All right, that's some funny stuff there. Lisa and I are cracking up at Groucho and his retorts to what the people are saying. Very funny stuff.
He is very quick-witted.
I'll say, and you bet your life. We'll get back to it in just a few moments.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. You know where I went, Lisa, this week?
Woodman's?
I did. I went to Woodman's and did all my shopping. My son was going to go with me because I wanted him to experience Woodman's, how great it is. And he was sleeping when I decided to go. I went about
drag him out,
11
throw
o'clock
him in, the car.
In the morning. And I'm like, he had said the
Time
night
to
before.
Wake up.
He's like, yeah, I'll go with you. I want to check it out. So, because, you know, he hears the Woodman spots and everything. I was telling him they're a new sponsor. And so I'm like, tomorrow we'll go to Woodman's and we'll do all our shopping. He's like, okay, great. So 11 o'clock, he was still sleeping.
So you didn't wait for
him? I got in my Jeep and I drove to Woodman's. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. I bought a lot of food. I stocked up. Like I told you, I think I when I stock up on food, it lasts a week and a half, sometimes 2 weeks. I mean, I buy a lot of food. And I used to shop at another grocery store before I learned about Woodman's. And this is true. I know about what it would cost for what I bought. You know, I'm thinking in my head about what it was going to be. And it was about $50 cheaper. And this is, I'm not exaggerating. I was like, that's all it is. When the guy told me how much it was, I'm like, that's all it is.
I always say the opposite. I'm like, ah, I always spend too much, but I need to go to Woodman's.
So generally I spend around $250 because I stock up about $250.
That's a lot of money.
It was under $200 for easily as much food, if not more, than I would get at another place. And that is no exaggeration. If you go to Woodman's, I guarantee
so
you,
your
folks,
stock up store.
If you go to Woodman's and you buy groceries, it will be less than another store.
I believe that.
Yeah, it really, really was. And on top of that, you can take your receipt, take a photo of your receipt, email it to us at Woodman's WGN. @gmail.com. That's Woodman's WGN @gmail.com. If you email it into us, we will send you 12 classic radio shows. And we do that every single month. We change the 12 shows up. So shop at Woodman's. Take a picture of your receipt. Send it to us at Woodman's WGN @gmail.com. And then we'll not only will you save money, but you will get some classic radio shows.
Sounds
not
like a deal.
Bad. All right. Let's get back now to You Bet Your Life.
Well, I've kidded our fireman, but I know all of us are thankful that the fire department does such an efficient job, Mr. Brewer. Now, you're going to play your bet your life for the chance at the $2,000 DeSoto Plymouth question. You run your $20 and the more than the other couples, and you get a chance at the big question. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenneman is off stage to remind our listeners.
The circus lady and the burlesque doorman earned $190.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected radio MCs as your category. Is that right? Now, you have $20. Here's your first question. How much will you bet?
Make it 10. Let's just make 10.
$10. Who is the popular master of ceremonies on People Are Funny?
Art Linkletter.
Art Linkletter is right.
They're on their way with $30.
Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
25.
25, okay.
25. Who is the MC on Stop the Music?
Is, darn it.
Fine, and save my child here, huh?
Okay, think of what it is.
Well, it's Bite Parks. You should have known that.
We love. And I'll have $5, Groucho.
Well, all right. Now you're down to $5, though. Well, that's a shame. Here's your third question. How much of the five would you try?
Let's try $3.
Try $3. All right. Who is the MC on Double or Nothing?
Walter O'Keefe.
Walter O'Keefe is right.
We're on the way again. They have $8.
Now you're climbing. You got $8. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the $8 will you try?
Let's bet it all, huh?
Okay, here you go. Up the ladder again. Now, who is the MC on Take It or Leave It?
Eddie Cantor.
Eddie Cantor.
And they wind up with $16.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, we'll soon know who gets the chance at the $2,000 question.
You know, friends, when you drive your car into a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's, you'll find they have the old-fashioned idea of courtesy.
Fenneman, you mean they kiss your hand as you leave?
Oh, no, Groucho, but they do show an honest interest in your problems, a real desire to treat you fairly and squarely.
Shall we dance?
Seriously, friends, that's important to you folks who own cars, whatever make of car it may be.
Well, I have an electric car, and it's quite a shock to my family. Well, enough. George, which couple is ahead so far?
Well, the circus lady and the stage doorman are leading with $190, and the secret word is still name. We asked if there were any engaged couples here tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Ann Lane and Mr. Ken Miller, and here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, youngsters, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if you say the secret word, you win $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Ann Lane?
Yes, sir.
That's a very, very pretty name. How old are you, Ann?
I'm 21.
And Ken Miller?
22.
You're the engaged boy, huh?
Yes, sir.
When is the big day to be, Miss Lane?
June the 27th.
Mm-hmm. Ken, why did you pick that day, huh?
Well, I didn't.
Did she pick it?
Yes, she did.
Who's going to be present at your wedding, Ken?
All her friends and her relatives and mine.
Do you know her relatives?
Well, not all of them.
You will eventually, brother. Oh, and will you know them? Well, if you didn't know them, why did you invite them?
I didn't.
Are you implying that her relatives are trying to crash the party?
No, sir. She invited them.
Are you sure you want to go through with this?
Yes,
I am. Could you back out now if you wanted to, Ken?
Oh, sure. I think so.
Well, how could you back out of it, huh?
Well, I could quit paying on the rings.
Then you have been giving it some thought, huh? Ann, is Ken going to be able to support you all right?
I think so. Other fellas support their wives on his income.
Married yet, and you're already beginning to turn into the Marshall Plan. Ann, do you have a pet name for your boyfriend, Ann?
Yes, sir, but I don't want to tell you what it is.
Well, couldn't you clean it up? Come on, Ann. What is it, huh?
Well,
give us a synonym.
He calls me Bunky, and I'll call him Punky.
Why Bunky, Ken?
I don't really know.
Well, they're cute names, I think. What sort of work do you do, punk?
I'm a template maker at Douglas in Long Beach.
A what?
A template maker.
Come again. What is a template maker, huh?
All a template maker is a...
fellow makes templates, I suppose. Now, that's clear. Now I understand it, huh? Well, what is a template?
A template is a pattern.
And a pattern is a what, huh?
A pattern is a structure that they build a part of a ship to and drill holes from that has a bunch of holes.
Did you ever read Gertrude Stein? Now, what kind of planes are you building now?
Well, it's called the C-124, and it's supposed to be the largest cargo ship built.
How big is it?
Well, it's big enough to hold 2 fully loaded buses and 200 fully loaded troops.
If they can get the buses loaded, but they can certainly get the troops loaded. I wish you'd notify me when you go up for the first time with that. Where do you work, Bunk?
I work at Douglas, too.
Oh, you work there, too?
Yes,
huh?
Sir.
So what do you do?
I do general clerical work in the planning department.
Secretary?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the difference between secretarial work in an aircraft factory and in any other office?
Well, I guess there isn't much difference except that you have to be able to understand the boss's terms when he's dictating.
Hmm. Well, when you start understanding the boss's terms, it's time for you to go home to mother. How long have you been carrying the torch for Punk here? Huh?
About 2 years.
How did you meet Ken for the first time?
Well, I was working in the tool crib.
You're a very pretty girl. Did I tell you that? Huh?
Thank you very much. I was working in the tool
crib. I didn't have anything to do with it, Anna. If you were a pretty girl, I'd say the same thing about you. Punk old boy, huh? So
I was working in the tool crib, and he was a riveter on the assembly line, and he had to make approximately 2 trips a day to the tool crib, but I saw to it that he made about 10 or 15.
What is a tool crib? I don't know. What are you keeping there, baby tools? Bunky, let's get back to your wedding. Where are you going on your honeymoon?
That's a secret.
Don't you think you ought to tell him? When are you leaving on your honeymoon, Bunky?
After the wedding.
Well, Bunky, you couldn't pick a better time. Of course, Ken doesn't care. He doesn't know where he's going anyway. Well, I'm sure you two are going to be very happy. And remember, old Uncle Groucho in future years when you're trying to think of a name for your 15th. Now you're going to try for a chance at the $2,000 question. You beat the other two couples and you win the chance at all that money. I can't tell you how much our other two couples won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The circus lady and the stage doorman are still ahead with $190.
Now, here we go. You have $20. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected bird songs as your category, is that right? Honeymooners, and how much are you going to bet of the $20? Talk right up, Bunky.
She says $10.
Give me the title of this bird song. Play, Jerry.
Bye-bye, Blackbird.
Bye-bye, Blackbird is right. All right, remember you're going for $2,000 tonight. You're on your way now. You got $30, says Fenneman. How much of the 30 will you try?
25.
25. What is the name of this song?
Flamingo.
Flamingo.
They're really sorry now. They have $55.
You got $55. Here's your third question. How much of the 55 will you try?
50.
Let's see if you can identify this one. Okay, Jerry. When the swallows come back to Canterstone.
Now they have $105.
You got $105. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much are the 105?
100.
100, huh? I know who has the pants in your family. Okay, give me the title of this bird song.
Skylark! Skylark is right. And they wind up with $205. And that means that they, with their $205, get the chance to solo play the $2,000 question.
Here's the engaged couple, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question, Groucho.
All right, here we go for $2,000. The young married kids. Well, if you win this, you certainly will have a wonderful honeymoon, huh? Are you ready? I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully, and please no help from the audience. Here it is. The monument to the Battle of San Jacinto, where General Santa Anna was defeated, is the tallest monument in the world. In what state is the San Jacinto Monument? All right, what is the answer you two have decided upon?
Texas?
That's right, in the state of Texas, near you. Well, it shows you love will find a way, huh? Now, what are you going to do with all that swag, Funky?
Well, I'm going to name my first boy Groucho.
Every time you open your mouth, I'm getting more broken. You just said name, and that's the secret word tonight, so that means you just want to... Compliments of the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. Let's see, you won $2,000 plus $205 in the quiz plus $100 for saying the secret word. Say, you really cleaned up tonight. $2,305. All I can say to you both is congratulations. From the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast, you bet your life.
Thank you very much.
Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life. Presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week, the big question will be worth $1,000.
Well, it's Bing Crosby's turn now, so good night, folks. And remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. Walkers wise use their eyes. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hope you enjoyed that. That's Your Bet, Your Life from April 19th, 1950. Secret word was name. And that last couple, that engaged couple, they won a ton of money, Lisa. Back then, $2,000. Let's see, today that would be worth, I'm going to guess, eight times that. Right?
Oh,
today's,
I don't know.
Today's inflation?
I don't know. If
not
that
bad,
much.
Like a couple hundred grand it was like they won back
I
then.
I can't believe she said the name name.
Yeah, she said name.
I'm going to name my child after you.
Groucho, yeah.
Crazy.
Wow, fun stuff. You bet your life. We'll have more of the WGN Radio Theater after these words. True crime cases were a big part of the golden age of radio. There was a lot of radio shows like Dragnet, Gangbusters, This Is Your FBI, Somebody Knows, it was another one. There was a lot of these shows during the golden age of radio that took closed files, actually, you know, cases that had been solved, and they went into old files and then took those stories and dramatized them. And the next show we're going to listen to did just that. They took true crime cases and dramatized them on Tales of the Texas Rangers. So we have a 1951 broadcast coming your way after the news, so stick around.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Thank you, David. It's 7 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning here on a Sunday morning. This is the WGN Radio Theater. If you are in your car, maybe you were spinning the dial and you heard an episode of You Bet Your Life. You're like, that sounds like Groucho Marx. Well, that's because we play all your favorite classic radio shows Saturday and Sunday nights beginning at 11 p.m. right here on AM 720 WGN. You name it, we have it. The Shadow, Lux Radio Theater, Suspense, Boston Blackie, Philip Marlowe, Sam Spade, The Whistler, Inner Sanctum, Jack Benny, and many, many more. They're all here every Saturday and Sunday on the WGN Radio Theater. My co-host, Lisa Wolf. That's right, no E at the end. Got it lopped off at Ellis Island when she moved into from... Where'd you come from? Russia?
Where'd you come from? What I was going to say was, how many years did it take you to remember that my name was not spelled with an E?
I did spell it with an E for a long time because I was so used to writing Nero Wolf with an E at the end. And
I think
that
you got
is
it now.
Your great-grandfather or uncle or something like that?
Great-great-granduncle.
Great-great-granduncle, right. Mm-hmm. So where did your ancestors come from through Ellis Island, probably? Where did they come from?
I have some great-grandparents that are from Russia.
That's
and some from Poland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I thought so. See?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see it in the profile.
Yeah. I was hatched, so I don't have any ancestors.
I can tell.
I was hatched right here in the United States. A giant egg. I cracked and came out of it.
Oh, you're cracked.
Yeah, definitely cracked. In this hour, Tales of the Texas Rangers from 1951. But first, we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes, our celebrity is Michael J. Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Coming to the present now.
Okay.
And the prize is the desktop indoor weather station.
Okay, sounds good. Which caller would you like?
Caller 2. Call right now.
Wow,
hurry up.
You better dial
312-981-7200. Hurry,
we'll
call now.
We'll be right back. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
All right, we've got John on the phone. Hey, John.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. You were caller number 2, so glad you made it through.
Hi, John.
Hi there.
All right, we're going to play a little Real or Ridiculous. Michael J. Fox, here we go. Number 1. He was the first choice for the role of Marty McFly in the Back to the Future trilogy. Real or ridiculous?
I say ridiculous.
You are 100% right, John. It's ridiculous because they started filming that with another actor, and that actor didn't turn out. He was the same kid from Mask. I'm trying to remember the name of that
guy. Okay, I am sorry to inform
you. No, you're
wrong,
100%.
Okay, I'm sorry.
100% wrong.
Look, I get this from a reputable source.
John, you and I are right.
All right,
don't
you know what? Here's
Lisa
what
Wolf.
I'm going to do when I'm done. I am going to verify this, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm correct.
John, you and I are 100% right.
John, who do you think is right?
No, we are right. We are right.
All right.
I've heard that before.
All right.
Here's what happened. The actor,
hang on
a second.
Nope.
Hang on.
Let's just wait and verify our sources.
1 second. And John knows this too.
Oh my gosh.
They started filming with a different actor, and that actor was the same kid from Mask.
I don't remember that already.
He was also in Pulp Fiction. I can't remember his name right now.
All right. I will verify the information.
They weren't happy with the way it was all coming out, and so then they cast.
All right, I'll look into it, and we'll go on from there.
Okay.
You okay with that?
Yes,
you're
I'm
getting
okay
all
with
worked
that
up over there. Number 2, he met
John.
His...
hang on a second.
Oh my
you know
gosh
what she's going to come back and say? that they offered it to Michael, Eric Stoltz. Yes, thank you, Eric Stoltz. That what Lisa's going to come back and say is, oh, they offered it to Michael J. Fox, and for some reason he turned it down, and then they gave it to Eric Stoltz, and then they gave it back to Michael J. Fox.
I will
and
tell you exactly what.
If that's true, then we might be wrong, John.
Well, my sources told me that he was the first choice, but I will verify that,
your
and
sources,
I will get back to you on that.
Your sources?
Yeah, reputable sources.
Not as reputable as John
your brain.
And me.
Okay, we'll work on that.
We're a team, John and I.
Are you ready to move on? Because I know you're getting upset over there.
Yes.
He's literally busting out
I'm
his
red.
Ears.
I'm red right now.
You are, and your yeah. ears are about to explode.
That's right.
Sheesh.
Thanks, John. Thanks, John.
Are we ready to move on?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Number two.
If John's ready to move
he's
on.
He's not going to let me talk. He's all worked up. Number two. He met his wife, Tracy, on the set of Family Ties. Real or ridiculous?
Real.
Real.
She played Alex Keaton's girlfriend.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Number three, Michael J. Fox owns a $40 million private jet.
Ridiculous.
John and I knew all
John,
three of those.
Here's the good news. You either got two or three correct. I'm voting for two. But either way,
no way,
you are the winner. And Carl, you have to be quiet for 1 minute because
I will
he's dying over there. I will
thumb wrestle you, Lisa.
I will not do that to you. John, you've won the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60 Minute Men. You can give them a call at 855-955. HVAC.
John, now you have a little glimpse into what I have to put up with here every
John,
Saturday and Sunday.
Now you have a glimpse
with
of what
Miss,
I have
Miss
to put up
know-it-all
with.
Over here.
He's got
You're
a...
wrong.
All right, well...
Eric Stoltz was Carl for mayor.
You know what, John?
And you're my vice mayor.
Can I speak to... The difference here is that I am willing to check my information and verify. He just says, you're wrong, and that's right. So...
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I don't know how I'm going to let you know, but as soon as we get back to the other end of the radio show, I'm going to announce it, so stay with us, okay?
All right.
Absolutely.
All
I
right,
really appreciate
John.
You guys.
Been a pleasure, buddy. It's been a pleasure getting...
Let him talk.
I drive truck, and I just love you guys over the weekend.
Aw, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you for letting him speak.
Drive safe, and it was a pleasure getting all three right with you, John.
John, I'm afraid we're not going to have time for the next radio show because Carl's got a lot to say right now. Okay.
Take care. Drive safe.
So sorry, everyone.
All right.
No
John's
time.
A big winner. He is a big winner. And we are going to now listen to Tales of the Texas Rangers. And our good pal Stacy Keach's dad created this show. And these were true crime cases based on the files of the Texas Rangers. Let's go back to a broadcast date of December 16th, 1951. This is called Pickup. It stars Joel McRae in part one of Tales of the Texas Rangers.
Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Another authentic reenactment of a case transcribed from the files of the Texas Rangers. Dates and places in the following story are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. And now, from the files of the Texas Rangers, the case called Pickup. It is 11:30 on the night of July 15th, 1948. In a hobo jungle just outside the freight yards of Stone Canyon, Texas, two men crouch beside a small fire.
Ain't that coffee ready yet, Whitey? Boy, you know it, the freight will be here.
Well, it ought to be ready now. Hand me them two tin cans.
Catch.
I wish we was already riding that rattler, Joe. I'm getting cold.
You're always getting cold.
Well, it's my chest. It ain't been right since last winter.
Yeah.
Well, here's your coffee. You know, I've been thinking, Joe, maybe we ought to stick around a while.
What for?
Well, there's plenty of work here. Besides, I'm getting tired. Always moving. Never getting set long enough to rest. Now, what's the matter?
It's coffee. What'd you put in it?
Well, I made it the same as always, Joe.
Oh, I ought to know better than to let you make it, Whitey. You never could make a cup of coffee fit to drink. Hey, come on, let's grab that rattler.
Hey, you're pouring the coffee on the fire.
That's all it's good for. Put out fires. Come on, let's go.
Well, let me finish my coffee first.
Come on, Whitey. You want to miss this break?
Well, okay, Joe. Joe, wait. I can't run so fast.
Come on, Whitey.
Joe, no, I'm trying, Joe. Wait.
It's not empty, Whitey, with the door open.
Yeah, all right.
Hurry up, will you?
I can't make it, Joe.
Give me a hand. There you go. I don't know why I bother with you. More trouble. Move out of the way. I want to get the door closed. Might be some railroad ticks around. Yeah. That's better.
Joe.
Yeah?
There's somebody else riding in this car. Over in the corner.
Well, so what? You don't own the railroad.
But he's laying on his face. Something's wrong with him.
He's probably drunk. Leave him be.
Well, maybe he's sick. I'm going to... Joe.
Now what's the matter with you?
This guy, he's dead.
What? Yeah, let me see. Yeah. We had to pick this car.
We got to get out of here, Joe.
You crazy, Whitey. This rattler's moving too fast now. We get killed.
Well, if the cops find us in here with that stiff, they'd send us away for good. We got to get out of here, Joe.
Wait, I got a better idea. He's going to get out.
You're going to throw a dead man off the train?
Why not? He won't care.
I still think we ought to leave him be. Get out soon as the rattler slows down near a town.
What's the matter, you chicken? Come on, get hold of his other arm.
Joe, no.
Go on, grab it, Whitey. Now, let's get him over to the door.
Oh, I feel sick.
You're always feeling sick. Sure is rough country out there. Okay, throw him out. There we go. Then I don't have to worry about him no more. Okay, Whitey. What do you say we get some sleep?
The body was found in a rocky ravine a day later by a Mexican nester, Julio Ramirez, who rode to the nearest town and reported his discovery. In the absence of the sheriff, the rangers were notified. Within 2 hours, rangers Jace Pearson and Clay Morgan were riding toward the ravine together with Ramirez.
How much farther, Julio?
Oh, he's not far, senor. Just over this slope. The dead one, he's there at the bottom.
Are you sure you never saw him before?
Yeah, pero no, senor. And I would know, because in a whole year I seen maybe like 6 people. This one I never seen. That's why it was such a great surprise to find the dead one. Oh, Rosita, she was so scared.
Rosita?
Yeah, that's my burro, senor. She was so scared. Senor, there is the dead one. He's down there by the rocks.
Oh, boy. Yeah, Jace, railroad tracks near this side of the ravine.
Uh-huh. Julio?
Si, senor.
How often do the trains come past here?
Two times a day, senor. But they do not carry a lot of people.
You mean the freight trains?
That's it. Freight trains.
He could have fallen off one of these freights, Jace. Yeah, we'll know better when we get a look at the body. Get up, Charlie.
Come on. Yeah, arre, Rosita, arre. No, Rosita, don't be scared. The dead one will not hurt you, querida.
Easy, Charlie. Easy, boy.
Yes, senores. My Rosita, she's still scared. If you don't need me some more...
You can go now, Julio. Thanks for helping us.
Por nada, senor. I'll be in my shack over that hill. Arre. Adios, senores.
Ooh, Charlie.
Oh, boy. Oh.
Let's get to work, Clay. Hey, shirt's torn. There's dirt and rock dust all over his back. Looks like he did fall off one of those freights
or got pushed.
Yeah, turn him over, will you?
Yeah.
Jace. Yeah, shot in the chest.
Well, that's our first break. Bullet didn't go through the body. We'll be able to turn the slug over to ballistics.
Yeah, I'll check him for identification. Not what you'd call a pretty boy, is he?
Rolling down that hill didn't improve his looks any. You find anything?
Not yet. Pockets are clean. I don't think we'll get much from the dungarees and the shirt. Hey, wait a minute.
What is it?
The laundry mark on the shirt. CJ405.
That's some help.
Not too much. We'll have to check every laundry in Texas to find out where this came from.
I got a hunch we may not have to do that. That stain on his shirt and those two on his dungarees. What would you say they were?
It could be crude oil.
Uh-huh. And take a look at his shoes. Some more stains on top and oil caked in the soles.
Yeah, looks like he worked in the oil fields.
We'll have the lab go over these clothes, but it sounds like a pretty good bet.
An awful lot of all towns in Texas, Jason.
Yeah, but only one I know of on this rail line.
You mean that boom town south of here?
That's it. Ralston.
Well, suppose we find out he did come from there. How'd he get in one of those freights and who pushed him off right here at this spot?
We'll worry about that later. Come on, Clay. We got a lot to do before we head for Ralston. We arranged for the local justice of the peace to bring the body into town. Then we photographed the dead man and the laundry mark on his shirt. 3 hours later, we were in Ralston checking the laundries. The second one told us what we wanted to know. The dead man was Carl Jessup, an oil well rigger who worked for an independent operator named Hamlin. We located Hamlin at one of his drilling rigs.
Well, what can I do for you, Rangers?
We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Sure, excuse me just a minute.
Scotty! Tell Al over in the Knowledge House to come on out and check that bit when you get her up.
All right, what kind of questions?
You know a rigger named Carl Jessup?
I did.
What do you mean you did?
Well, he worked for me till 2 nights ago. Didn't show up for work the next morning, so I figured he took off.
Any reason why he'd do that?
Well, he'd just been paid a month's wages. Maybe just wanted to move on, work someplace else.
But he didn't tell you he was going to quit?
No, he didn't. Wasn't surprised, though.
Why not?
Well, Carl was always kind of restless. Big, homely boy. Got the idea he was always unhappy about something.
Anything in particular he was unhappy about?
Well, I don't rightly know. Seemed like he was carrying a grudge against the world because he was born so homely, I guess. But that's only a guess.
Clay, show Mr. Hamlin the photo.
Yeah.
Is that Jessup?
Yeah, that's him all right. It was kind of funny, Ranger. Was he hurt or something?
He was murdered, Mr. Hamlin. Shot through the chest.
Murdered? But who'd want to...
That's what we're trying to find out. Did Jessup ever fight with any of the other oil workers around Ralston?
Not that I know of. Like I say, he was quiet and never cracked a smile, but I never seen him fight with nobody.
When was the last time you saw him?
Well, like I say, 2 nights ago. I just paid them in, and most of us went down to the Bonanza Cafe for a glass of beer. Jessup was there.
Did he seem upset about anything?
Upset? No, matter of fact, he was looking happier than I ever seen him look. Can't say as I blame him, neither.
How do you mean?
Well, he was talking with the prettiest redhead I've seen in a long time.
Oh? You know her name?
No, never seen her before.
But can you describe her?
That ain't hard. She's about 5'4", built like a... Well, you know what I mean.
Didn't it strike you funny, Mr. Hamlin, that a pretty girl like that would be hanging around an ugly fella like Jessup?
Well, maybe it did a little, but you never know about women. Besides, I figured that was strictly their business.
Did you see them leave the cafe together?
Might have. Couldn't swear to it. I remember looking up once and they were both gone. Say, you figure this gal shot Carl?
We don't figure anything yet. This Bonanza Cafe, is it near the freight yards?
Yeah, about a block away.
Uh-huh. How much money did Jessup get paid that night?
Well, I'd have to check my records to tell you exact, but I know it was a right fair amount. Worked a lot of overtime. Must come to $600-odd.
Are you thinking the same thing I am, Jace?
Yeah, sounds like the old confidence game, all right. And from what we know of Jessup, he was a sitting duck for it. Mr. Hamlin, you mind taking a trip to Austin with us?
What for, Ranger?
We want you to go through our mug file of confidence girls. Maybe you can identify a pretty redhead. How about that one, Mr. Hamlin?
Oh, no, that ain't her. Now, look, Ranger, I'm glad to help out if I can, but I'm getting a little tired of looking at gals' pictures.
We don't have many more to go through. Hand me that last bunch of folders, Clay.
Sure.
Here, take a look at this one.
Nope. Don't even look like her. Besides, that one's a blonde. Gad, you once got red hair. Real red.
It might be dyed. This one look familiar?
I don't... Wait a minute. Yeah, let me take another look. Yeah, that's her, Ranger. That's her.
Who is it, Jace? Lil Dunlop. Served 3 terms at Gory. Confidence record.
I didn't recognize her at first. Looks a mite younger in that picture.
It was taken 4 years ago. You sure she's the one?
Oh, couldn't miss her. She sure got a pretty face. So she's the one that shot Jessup, huh?
More likely the man she works with.
Man? I didn't see no man with her and Jessup.
You wouldn't have. He was probably waiting outside the cafe, maybe in the freight yard.
Well, how'd you find out who the man was, if there was one?
Lil Dunlap's record ought to tell us something. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You find something, Jace?
Could be. Each time Lil was arrested, she was with a man named Charlie Bond.
You want me to get his file out?
Yeah, but first take Mr. Hamlin over to the colonel and see if he gets transportation back to Ralston.
Sure. Come on, Mr. Hamlin. All right.
Meet you back here, Jace?
No, by the teletypes. I'm going to get out an all-points bulletin on Lil Dunlop and Charlie Bond.
In a moment, we will continue with Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson.
All right, let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. We'll have breaking news about the Back to the Future controversy with Lisa and Carl. Whether it was Michael J. Fox as the first person considered for the role or not, that'll be coming your way after news, along with the conclusion to Tales of the Texas Rangers.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Now we have bombshell news here, breaking news about the controversy on Back to the Future. I say that the first person was Eric Stoltz, and then he didn't do well, and so then they cast Michael J. Fox. But Lisa has some direct quote from what source?
Here's the thing, Carl. You know a lot about classic radio. And
yes,
if this was anything about classic radio, you would be the expert and you would know. Other than that, you might want to leave your mind open to things that you may not know
if
about.
If I'm wrong about this, I could still win the mayoral race, and John could be my vice mayor.
That is true, but when he hears that you're wrong, he may feel differently. So the statement I said was that Michael J. Fox was the first choice for the role of Marty McFly in the Back to the Future trilogy. The answer to that, the correct answer, is real. That is true. And here is the information. And I'm reading this right from the internet, which is always
true. Michael
J. Fox was the first choice to play Marty, but he was busy filming his television series Family Ties, and Eric Stoltz was cast. After the filmmakers decided that Eric Stoltz was wrong for the role, a deal was struck to allow Fox to film Back to the Future without interrupting his television schedule.
Well, here's what I have to say about that.
Yes.
There's an old, ancient saying.
An old and ancient?
Yes,
ancient. That would be redundant, but okay.
It's an old, ancient.
It's old and ancient.
Saying,
okay.
All right. Here's the saying, all right? Believe none of what you hear and only half of what you see. So I'm not believing any of what I just heard.
Right, well, then you won't believe anything that I write for Real or Ridiculous. If you get it wrong, then it's wrong.
Actually, I'm going to be a man enough, and John also, because he's my vice mayor.
Well, I know he's listening.
John and I are going to give this one to you, Lisa. We're wrong. We're man enough. We're mayors enough to say that we are wrong.
Well, you know what?
It's a trick question, but you're sneaky and tricky.
Here's the thing. Number one, you should listen to your listeners. And number two, you should listen to
John agreed with me.
I know, but number two, you should listen to
your vice mayor.
You should
he
listen
should
to
always
your co-host
agree with me.
And leave your mind open.
Yeah, now you're right on this one.
I know.
So, oh well.
All right. Wanted to clear up.
For once, you're right.
This time, you'll give it to me.
Yeah.
All right.
Good job. You know what? You're very good at this game.
Well, somebody's got to be good at that kind of stuff.
I'm not so good at it.
Well, you just stick with the classic radio. I'll do the rest.
All right.
Okay.
Let's get back to Tales of the Texas Rangers.
We continue now with Tales of the Texas Rangers and our authentic story, Pickup.
We got out in All Points Bulletin on Lil Dunlap and Charlie Bond with orders to spot and keep under surveillance, but not to apprehend. Clay worked south and I worked north, hoping to get some line on them. The first day passed without results. So did the second. The third day at noon, I received an urgent radio call from Clay. I met him back at company headquarters.
Well, you got back here in a hurry, Jace.
What's up, Clay?
Phone call from San Antonio about Lil Dunlop.
Oh, they ever spotted?
Well, not exactly, but a rancher identified her as the girl who picked him up in a cafe last night. She invited him to a party.
Mm-hmm. Then a shortcut through the freight yards. A man jumped out, slugged him, and rolled him for all his money. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Same old pattern. Did the rancher get a look at the man?
No, Jace, it was too dark, but it's a good bet it was Charlie Bond.
How much did they get away with this time?
Over $800.
Doing all right.
Yeah, not for long, I hope. You know, they must be pretty confident to start operating so soon after they murdered Carl Jessup.
Yeah, but at least they're operating. And sooner or later, we'll get them.
Probably not in San Antonio, though. Chances are they moved on as soon as they made their haul there last night.
Maybe. Hey, wait a minute.
What's on your mind?
San Antonio. Where's that folder with Charlie Bond's record?
Over on the other desk. You got an idea, Jace?
Yeah, I'll tell you in a second. Here's what I want. Take a look at that page, Clay. Second paragraph.
I don't get it, Jace. This just says Charlie once attempted escape from Huntsville with his cellmate, a guy named Earl Dorn.
Otherwise known as Mousy Dorn.
You know this fella?
I sent him off on his last trip to Huntsville. He worked the confidence racket, same as Charlie Bond.
Yeah, but what's that got to do with...
San Antonio, Clay? That's where Mousy lives. Never operated any other place.
You don't think he was in on that job with the other pair last night, do you?
No, but if he was as good a friend of Charlie as I think he was, Charlie wouldn't leave San Antonio without seeing him. Maybe he and the girl even stayed with Mousy.
Could be worth our paying a visit, huh?
Yeah. Come on, Clay. Let's get to San Antonio. This is it.
Doesn't look like anybody lives here.
We'll soon find out.
Not what you'd call a fancy house.
Well, Mousy never did go in much for trimmings.
Yeah, I didn't think anybody was here.
Try the door.
Yeah. Jay, she's going out the back window.
Yeah.
Hold it, Mousy.
Let me go. Come on, let me go, huh?
Stick around, Mousy. It's not polite to walk out on your visitors.
Why, I ain't done nothing, Ranger.
Why are you trying to run away?
I wasn't trying to run away. I just got scared. Let me go, huh?
Sure. Come on, let's go sit down. We want to have a little talk with you.
Well, what are you after me for, Ranger? I've been living right ever since I got out of Huntsville.
Sit down, Mousy.
Yeah, sit down.
Jace, over here on the sink.
Yeah, you been having visitors, Mousy?
Huh? No. I had no visitors, no.
You usually drink coffee out of 3 cups at once?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. My aunt and uncle from Houston, they come by for a cup of coffee.
I see.
Yeah.
A middle cup, Clay. Hold it by the bottom and bring it here, will you?
Yeah.
Thanks. So your aunt and uncle were here?
Yeah, my aunt and uncle, yeah.
What color's your aunt's hair, Mousy?
Huh? She got gray hair, yeah.
You sure it isn't red, Mousy?
Yeah, why?
Because the lipstick on this cup is bright orange, the kind a red-headed woman might wear. You sure it was your aunt and uncle that were here?
It could have been
Lil Dunlop and Charlie Bond, couldn't it, Mousy?
Charlie? I ain't seen him in a long time. A real long time, Ranger.
How many times you been in Huntsville?
I don't remember. Twice, I think.
3 times, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember now. It was 3 times, yeah.
You know what happens when you get sent up again?
Oh, you can't send me up again. I ain't done nothing.
We're looking for Charlie Bond and Lil Dunlop. They were here, weren't they?
No.
If they were here and you don't tell us, the charge will be harboring criminals. The judge will throw the book at you.
They weren't here, I tell you.
All right, Clay. Let's take these cups down to the sheriff's office. We'll bring Mousy along for company.
You can't take me in. I ain't done nothing.
We won't keep you long, just till we take the fingerprints off these cups.
Fingerprints?
Uh-huh. As soon as we find out they don't belong to Charlie and Lil, we'll bring you back home. You ready, Mousy?
Wait. Well, wait a minute.
You ready to start talking?
Maybe they was here.
How long ago?
Early this morning.
They say where they were heading?
No, they didn't say.
Come on, Mousy. Let's go.
Oh, wait. I... Okay, Ranger. They're going to Gulf City.
It sounds like they're going to try their luck with a seaport for a change, Jason.
Yeah. Which cafe will Lil be working, Mousy?
I don't know. She and Charlie were talking about it. They figured they'd decide when they get there.
Come on, Clay.
I don't know after Charlie and Lil, Ranger. You got to believe me. If I'd have known, I'd have tore you right off.
I'll bet. Next time, just be more careful about who you invite for coffee. I phoned the Gulf City chief of police and asked him to stake out his men in every cafe where Lil might be expected. As soon as one of them spotted her, he was to keep an eye on her and phone the chief's office. Then Clay and I headed for Gulf City.
Yeah, just 20 more miles to Gulf City, Jace.
Yeah. We ought to make it before dark.
And the chief's men on the job, it shouldn't be too hard to spot Lil.
Our problem's to take Lil and Charlie together. We'll have to set a trap, Clay.
I don't follow you.
As soon as we get to Gulf City, I'm going to borrow a pair of dungarees and a denim shirt.
What for?
So I can pose as a seaman who's just been paid, walk into the cafe where Lil is and try and get her to pick me up.
Well, let's say she does, then what?
And she'll lead us to Charlie Bond.
But, Jace, Charlie's a killer. You won't be able to carry a gun in that seaman's outfit.
No, but you'll have a gun, and you'll be tailing me from the minute Lil and I leave the cafe.
Well, I hope it works.
Not half as much as I do, Clay. Not half as much. We arrived at Gulf City around 7 o'clock. I outlined my plan to the chief, and he arranged for some seaman's clothes. I changed into dungarees, and then Clay and I settled down in the office to wait.
10 o'clock. Maybe she's not going to show tonight.
I'll give her time. She's probably waiting till the cafes fill up, so it won't be so noticeable when she walks out with her latest sucker.
Only tonight, that's going to be you.
If things work our way, there'll be two other suckers tonight. Lil and Charlie Bond.
If things work our way. I still don't like it, Jason.
You got a better idea?
No, I reckon not.
What's the matter?
Yeah, it's not really funny, but I can't get over you in that seaman's outfit. You look like you haven't spent a day on land in 10 years.
Just so it convinces Lil.
And it ought to. I'm convinced and I know you. I'll get it. Ranger Morgan. Where? Yeah, right away. Come on.
Lil?
The Anchor Cafe. Let's go, sailor.
The cafe was crowded with seamen when I walked in. I spotted Lil at the corner table and passed her on my way to the counter. Took out a wad of bills and made sure she could see them, and then I asked the proprietor for change to play the jukebox. I put in a nickel, and when I turned around, she was standing at my shoulder.
Hello, sailor.
Hi.
You like music, huh?
Uh-huh. We don't get to hear much aboard ship.
You off one of the tankers?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Jack.
Jack. That's a real nice name. Mine's Lil. Buy me a beer, Jack?
Sure. Come on over.
I hope you don't think I did wrong coming up to you and speaking first.
I'm glad you did. One beer and coffee, please.
But don't you drink beer?
Yes, sometimes.
Oh, I knew when you came in you'd be nice to talk to. I was right, too.
It's funny, I was thinking the same thing when I saw you.
Were you? I didn't even know you'd noticed me.
Oh, with that pretty red hair and... How could I miss you?
You are nice. Gee, I wish we could dance in here.
Yeah, so do I.
Hey, I got an idea. A few friends of mine are having a party tonight. Why don't we go? We could dance there.
I couldn't go in these work clothes.
Oh, that won't make any difference. Come on, Jack.
Well, but don't you want to wait for your beer?
There'll be plenty at the party. Come on.
Okay. Forget that beer and coffee. Maybe I ought to go back to ship and change into some better clothes.
I told you, it won't make any difference. My friends won't care.
Which way?
Right down here. Sure, I'm glad I met you tonight.
Yeah, me too. Only I wish we'd met a long time before this.
You see, I was right. You are nice. Oh, we'd take a shortcut through here.
freight yards?
Mm-hmm. My friends live right on the other side. This'll save us a couple of miles of walking.
Yeah, if you say so.
It only takes a few minutes. How come you're so quiet all of a sudden?
Reckon I don't have much to say.
Well, I expect we'll have a lot to talk about before the evening's over.
You can say that again.
Well, now, that's more like it. For a minute there, I was beginning to think you didn't like me.
You scared of something, Lil?
Well, of course not. Why?
The way you're looking around, I...
No, you don't!
Slug him, Charlie, slug him!
Give me that gun!
Charlie, look out!
Grab the girl, Clay. I got this one.
Yeah. Get your hands off
me. Come on.
Get him off.
Come on, I said give me that gun. You...
Charlie! You killed Charlie!
Yeah, he'll be all right.
You okay, Jace?
Yeah. Put the other pair of cuffs on Charlie.
Sure.
Dirty, dirty cuffs.
Hey, you sure hit him hard, Jace. He's out cold in the face.
I should have known you were a cop. I should have figured it out the minute I saw you.
Don't worry, Lil. You'll have plenty of time for figuring from now on.
In just a moment, we will tell you the results of the case you have just heard. Music means all things to all people. Music is relaxation, adventure. Elysian fields of dreams come true. We of NBC feel proud of our Monday evening lineup of truly fine music programs. Tomorrow means more fine music on NBC with the Railroad Hour featuring Gordon McRae. Tomorrow, Nadine Connor will guest on the Railroad Hour production of the Romberg-Gershwin musical Rosalie to add to your Monday evening listening pleasure. Also tomorrow, there's The Voice of Firestone with guest Jerome Hines and Howard Barlow directing the orchestra in March of the Toys. Later, there's the Telephone Hour with guest soloist Michael Rabin and the orchestra under the direction of Donald Voorhees. And enjoy the Mario Lanza Show with Mario Lanza, lovely Giselle McKenzie, and Ray Sinatra and the orchestra. Yes, Monday is your invitation to hear the Railroad Hour, the Voice of Firestone, the Telephone Hour, and the Mario Lanza Show. Hear it on this station. Here are the results of the case you have just heard.
Faced with ballistics proof that his gun killed Carl Jessup, Charlie Bond admitted shooting him and placing his body in a freight car. Bond and Lil Dunlop received life sentences in the penitentiary. Early in 1949, Whitey Holmes, a vagrant dying of tuberculosis in a county hospital, confessed that he and another man had thrown the body of Carl Jessup from a moving train, thus clearing up the unsolved element in the case.
Week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Cast included Tony Barrett, Tom McKee, Brad Brown, Herb Ellis, Bob Sweeney, and Joan Banks. Technical advisor was Captain M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez of the Texas Rangers. This story was transcribed and adapted by Charles E. Israel, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Peake. Hal Gibney speaking.
Next, it's The Big Show, All This and Tallulah 2 on NBC.
That is Tales of the Texas Rangers, December 16th, 1951, pickup, starring Joel McRae, and that was produced and directed by Stacy Keach, as heard on NBC.